The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another hot stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Terry Cushman here, flying solo for this episode. Everybody apparently a little bit busy on this January night as I readjust my settings a little. I was in Florida for the weekend, so I had my equipment with me in case anything developed and all the knobs on my interface get, they move as they're in my luggage. So hopefully everything sounds okay, but I think we're good now. All right, so really interesting day. Anthony Santander has finally come off the market. He goes to the Toronto Blue Jays, which is the team that he was most heavily connected to. That's going to be a five-year deal worth $92.5 million guaranteed. A lot of that money is deferred. I'm not going to get into that because I'm not really a math whiz, but a couple details aside from that, he can opt out after the third year, but the Blue Jays can negate that opt out if they agree to pick up the option for 2030, and that's a $15 million option. It also contains a $5 million buyout in case they get to that season and then change their mind. So contracts aren't simple anymore, as we're finding out. But what's significant about this is the Blue Jays were also relatively heavily connected to Alex Bregman. Now, the Santander contract agreement was announced mid-afternoon. About 10:30 p.m. Eastern tonight, Alex Cora posted what very much feels like a cryptid tweet that simply just contained a green check mark. And that was it. His mentions blew up because everybody wants to know what it means. Are we about to sign Bregman? Could it mean other things? There were some comical, sarcastic tweets in there in his mentions, as can be expected on the Twitter platform. So it remains to be seen, but I guess for the next 24, 48 hours, we kind of have to be on Alex Bregman watch. Now, if you're a Bregman guy and you're trying to read the tea leaves as this is a strong indicator that the Red Sox are going to sign him, it's very well known that Alex Cora and Sam Kennedy have expressed a lot of interest in him, dating back to the maybe as early as the GM meetings, if not the winter meetings, but a lot of interest there, as we have covered. Toronto is really the only other big market team that has been in on him other than the Red Sox. Detroit should be a big market team, but they haven't been for quite some time. So I'm going to put them in the small market team category, and there doesn't seem to be a ton of recent momentum behind him going to the Detroit Tigers. So who else is left? Well, surprisingly, before the Santander development took place in the afternoon, this morning, there was widespread reporting that the Houston Astros might still, in fact, be interested in bringing back Alex Bregman. And most of that came from comments from Joe Espada. He is their manager. And he was saying their arms are still wide open for Bregman. And he seemed to disclose that the team is still talking to other free agents. So perhaps the Astros aren't done yet, even if they're not too serious about Bregman, despite the reports. So it kind of bears watching. Now, if you're an anti-Bregman guy, and I kind of lean anti-Bregman if it happens, as I've said numerous times, I'm not going to throw a tantrum, but he's not the most obvious fit because he's not going to go at least directly to third base. That is still going to be occupied by Rafi Devers. You have Christian Campbell coming up in the coming weeks after the season starts. Still a slight chance he could make the opening day roster, but he's going to be up fairly imminently, barring an injury of some sort. And Anthony is projected to be your long-term second baseman, so there's no real fit for Alex Bregman long-term. I guess you could make the case that Campbell can go to the outfield. I hope I didn't just slip there and say Anthony was the second baseman. I've meant Campbell the whole time. It's kind of late, so bear with me. But Campbell is expected to, or had been expected to be the second baseman of the future. So it's just, it's a tough fit really for Bregman long term. He also doesn't really profile as a three-hole hitter like he would need to be if he was going to be hitting behind Rafi Devers, and that's what we need right now is we need somebody to hit behind Rafi and give him a little bit of protection. I think Pete Alonso fits that bill a little bit more because he is a bona fide power hitter. He's a right-handed hitter. He's hit 40-plus home runs in 3 out of the 6 years in his career. And I just think, and you can get him on a much shorter-term deal, probably 3 or 4 years tops with some opt-outs in there. And another reason why I'm a Pete Alonso guy for a 3 or 4 year window is you don't know who you're going to have in the pipeline. I mean, you could very well have a borderline stud prospect ready to come up by the end of that 3 or 4 year window. And the perfect example of that is Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell weren't even in our organization 3 years ago, hadn't even been drafted yet. And Campbell wasn't really a high-end draftee. I think he was drafted in the 4th round. So he was just kind of an out-of-nowhere guy and, you know, emerged as essentially one of our big three. So that's just another reason why I'm open-minded towards Alonso. You can figure stuff out in the next, you know, 3 to 4 years. Adding Alonso would almost assure you that Masataka Yoshida will be either traded or designated for assignment. I don't think that's a bad thing, you know, with the way the pieces fit together as far as this lineup goes. But it's hard to make a case for Alex Bregman. Now, could I be wrong? Yes. Have I been wrong before? Yes. It's hard to really know what the Red Sox are thinking. And historically, you know, today's going to be January 21st. How many key free agents have the Red Sox ever signed January 21st or later? It's always happened earlier in the winter. The only one that comes to mind is JD Martinez. He signed the first week of February. He didn't really have a market outside of the Red Sox. The Diamondbacks were the only other team to make him an offer that winter, and it was only for 1 year. So it was essentially just a staring contest between the Red Sox and Scott Boras during the pursuit of Martinez. So that's really the only reason that got dragged out. Bregman does have a bigger market than Martinez did. The problem is those mid-market players aren't really, you know, they're not really as valuable as they once were. So it's been a bit of a waiting game for the Bregman camp, but, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But my feel, despite the cryptic tweet from Alex Cora, is that it's still a tough sell. It's still a tough sell that the Red Sox are going to sign him to a six-year deal with a lot of uncertainty with how he's going to fit in this organization long-term. You have a second baseman coming up that can be on your roster for cheap money, less than $1 million for the first 2 to 3 years of his deal versus paying Bregman 30. And he's not even a ideal fit for your lineup. So we'll see how it goes. I don't really know who's going to sign him. Ken Rosenthal, Buster Olney, they point to Boston as the surefire fit. But again, as a guy who lives it and breathes it every day, like I do, I don't know. And you can go get, even if you don't want Pete Alonso, a guy that I've clamored for nearly all winter long, Nolan Arenado, you could get him for relatively cheap money on a three-year deal, essentially. So another reason that's still a tough fit, but we'll see how it goes. If anything develops throughout this Tuesday, we'll obviously be back tonight to cover that. But we'll cover a couple more things here, Dodgers related. Two major developments for them. Number one, Roki Sasaki has made his decision, and it is to sign with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He'll get a $6 million signing bonus with their international money. That's kind of a complicated system. I'm not going to pretend to understand it inside and out, but teams are allotted so much money per year, and the Dodgers basically dumped all of their bonus money on Sasaki. Aside from the bonus money, he's going to make the major league minimum, so he'll be making less than $1 million a year, just like a guy like Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell. Despite the fact they're hitters, it's all the same in terms of pre-arbitration salary. So, and that's annoying because the Dodgers have a $370 million payroll and they're getting an ace pitcher with the potential to be a generational talent for essentially nothing. They've had to back up the Brinks truck for everyone else, but Roki Sasaki is just a huge bonus for them, and he signed there. And there was a lot of smoke and mirrors throughout that saga. His agent, I forget his name, he does have a notable agent, but in hindsight, it just feels like it was the agent's job to make it look like it was a serious, thorough vetting process on behalf of Sasaki. And I'm always speculating, but it just looked like a smoke and mirror show. And Sasaki even was quoted after making the decision that he wanted to sign with the Dodgers the whole time. So it would have looked extremely shady if he signed with them on day one and didn't really have much of a meet and greet with other teams and all that. He did meet with Toronto last week, which kind of made it seem like maybe the Dodgers weren't the definite choice. But in the end, that is how it played out. And they have a hell of a recruiting team headed up by Shohei Ohtani, so tough to compete against that. And a lot of people are saying that, you know, the Dodgers shouldn't be allowed to build a team like this. I'll get into that in just a second, but the other development that's also significant is Tanner Scott, the consensus highest-end reliever on the market this winter. He has signed with the Los Angeles Dodgers for a deal worth 4 years, $72 million. Lots of deferred money in that deal. I don't know exactly how much, but that goes back to the ethical concerns that teams have with what the Dodgers are doing. A lot of their high-end players aren't, you know, getting their full salary every year. Most of them are deferred. Shohei Ohtani, I think Teoscar Hernandez, Blake Snell, Tanner Scott. There's a lot of deferred money there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. The next collective bargaining deal runs up after the 2026 season. It's expected that it's going to be a long winter of negotiations in 2027 because, or coming into 2027, I should say, because owners steadfastly want a salary cap and the union's not going to allow that, obviously. So it's going to be messy. I just thinking outside the box here, I'd be willing to, if I was an owner, I'd be willing to forego the salary cap if from 2027 forward, all new contracts were not allowed to have deferred money, because that would put the Dodgers into a bit of a bind. Suddenly, if they signed a Shohei Ohtani type deal, now they have to pay the full $70 million a year. They're only actually paying Ohtani $2 million a year of the 70, and $68 million over the next, of each of the next 10 years is deferred after the contract expires. So I think if you just eliminate that, if that could be a compromise to not having a salary cap, perhaps you can, you know, make those negotiations a little bit easier. But getting back to Tanner Scott here real quick, the thing that sort of annoys me, it doesn't frustrate me, but the Red Sox were reported to be very aggressive for Scott, and his market was projected to top out in the 4 year, $80 million range. That seemed like it would be the top of the market. And he actually signed for a little bit less than that. You know, 4 years, $72 million. So that's $18 million per season without the deferred money. I doubt any of that would have been deferred had he signed with the Red Sox, but he signed with the Dodgers. So, I mean, the thing that annoys me is if the Red Sox were serious for him and they were aggressive, why was that deal too much money? He's a lot younger than Kenley Jansen was. Jansen was making 16 a year. This is 18 a year. I just don't, I'm just tired of being told that, as is everybody, that the Red Sox are interested on guys, and they're not even, that's not even an overpay. That's what his market was, maybe even slightly below what his market was. So, you know, if you're holding out hope that they're going to sign Bregman, why would you? It's just so dumb. And the other thing that doesn't get brought up with the clearest of context is this Dodgers team is not homegrown. This wasn't a slow build from within the organization. You look at their rotation real quick. Blake Snell, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Tyler Glass now, Shohei Ohtani, Roki Sasaki now. None of those guys are homegrown. Yeah, you've got some fringe guys, some depth guys like Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin that are technically homegrown, but they might not really see the light of day in that rotation outside of injuries. So their main cast of characters in that starting rotation, not homegrown. Let's go to the bullpen. Michael Kopech, Blake Treinen, and now Tanner Scott. Those are your 7th, 8th, and 9th inning guys. Not homegrown. So don't look to the bullpen for their premier relievers to be homegrown, because they're not. All right, let's go to the position players real quick. Freddie Freeman, not homegrown. Mookie Betts, not homegrown. Teoscar Hernandez, not homegrown. Tommy Edman, Michael Conforto, both of them, not homegrown. Max Muncy, technically not homegrown, but if you want to insist that he is, I'll allow it. He did spend 2 years in Oakland, wasn't a good player, bad metrics. They straight up released him. He was so bad, nobody even signed him for the full 2017 season. He was released in spring training that year. Nobody picked him up. The Dodgers picked him up and kind of finished the development of Muncy. And he's been basically a perennial 3,100 guy. Last year was a bit of an off season, but you've got Muncy and you've got Will Smith. That's it. The rest of the team was bought and paid for. So, I mean, maybe they just gave up and pulled the plug on the development aspect of things. I don't know. They just opened up the checkbook. Maybe they just got sick of losing. They were a perennial division winner. A lot of people picked them to go to the World Series several years prior to them even signing Ohtani. It just never really worked out outside of 2020. So Andrew Friedman comes from Tampa, a team that's an elite talent development organization. But I don't know. So, I mean, they could go on this disgusting run. They're on paper, it looks like one of the greatest teams of all time. Super teams don't typically win championships, as we've seen historically over the years. But even if they do go on, you know, a run here where they win 2 or 3 championships in the next 5 years, what the Astros did for 7 years in a row will always be far more impressive to me, because that, by and large, was a homegrown team. There wasn't any real bad contracts. I still can't really think of a bad contract on the Houston Astros. Perhaps the back end of this Altuve deal won't age well, because he's had some knee problems, and we'll see. But the Astros, and I would put the Braves number 2, are just the smartest organization. They have the smartest nerds. They don't do a lot of dumb things. So we'll see what happens with the Dodgers. I think potentially they could be more hated than the 1990s New York Yankees that won 3 or 4 championships in 5 or 6 years. I took a poll on that. Most people said the Yankees were still the most hated, but let's live through another couple of Dodgers championships and we'll reevaluate who's more hated. But it seems like the Dodgers right now are the new evil empire, and the Yankees are never going to be relevant. They're never going to win a championship or even sniff a championship with Brian Cashman in that front office. I guess you can say they sniffed a championship this year, but it was always going to be the Dodgers, and the Yankees didn't really put up much of a fight, especially in that epic meltdown and what ended up being the final game. So we'll see what happens, but it's annoying. The Dodgers seem to, you know, add. Our team, I mean, the Red Sox have still been outspent by the Oakland Athletics or Sacramento Athletics, whatever you want to call them. They haven't replaced Tyler O'Neill yet. They haven't really done anything since the Walker Buehler signing. They've made a lot of minor league moves, but the Red Sox still not a big market team. And, you know, the annoyance and the frustration continues. We were told in early November that we would potentially blow past the luxury tax, and it's been the same winter we've had, outside of course, the, you know, the Garrett Crochet trade. It's essentially been the same exact winter that we've had previously. So we'll see what happens. We'll wrap on that. But I would expect it should be an eventful week in Major League Baseball, if not with the Red Sox. So we'll be back to cover it. Hope you're all having a good start to your week. Take care.